Speaking of just in time, we've been able to track down Adam Collins, just in time, who's doing a hell of a job covering the Ashes for us on RSN 927. The Final Word podcast is going through the roof online. It is a juggernaut, and it's all because Collo is awesome, and he's a great Hawthorn supporter, and I'm sure he was watching Ruffy yesterday as well as the cricket at Lords. Collo, g'day.
Good morning, fellas. I certainly was. I was grateful for the rain delay this morning at Lords, which meant that I could watch the final term of Ruffy's career, have a bit of a cry. That's what I'm not ashamed about. I remember that 2004 draft so well, and to think that Buddy, Ruffy and Jordan Lewis have played 10 flags between them, it's pretty cool.
Yes, it was a nice farewell to a home farewell anyway to Ruffy in front of the faithful yesterday, and a big win. We were talking before, Collo, about the test at Lords. Very rarely do you get a rain-interrupted test. It's so often rain-interrupted that has any sort of commentary or drama associated. But boy, did we have a five-day window there at Lords.
This was awesome. I spoke to you guys at the end of day two, which was essentially day one because of a washout there. And after that, we had bulk of the third day rained out as well, probably the Friday rained out too. And to think that what we had this weekend on day four and five, we'll talk about that for a really long time, not least the spell of Jofra Archer, both against Stephen Smith and the sort of dramatic ending to that contest. And then what happened today with Marnus Labuschagne, who was just phenomenal after Usman Khawaja and David Warner fell to a different type of spell from Archer the day before. This was all about getting the ball full and moving around and in the corridor, and that's why he's the complete package. Of course, we can see how quick he is and how competitive he is with the way he bowled to Smith and Cummins subsequently. But the way that he kept the ball full to Warner and Khawaja is complete class. I mean, this guy is going to be the most important bowler of his generation, without a doubt.
What was the biggest story for you for the last 5 days? Was it the Steve Smith concussion situation, or was it Jofra's spell, or was it Marnus Labuschagne? What's the biggest story, talking point for you?
Well, I think what happened with Steve Smith stands out because it's the first time we've seen a concussion sub required, and just the fact that it was Stephen Smith and all the drama around trying to get that man out and the fact that they weren't able to get him out per se, although they did dismiss him, but that was after he returned from what we now know was a concussion, albeit one that took maybe 12 hours to finally start showing symptoms accordingly. But that Smith-Archer passage of play on Saturday afternoon, I mean, it's not one thing, it's several things happening at the same time. The most important batsman in the world facing the most exciting young bowler in the world on debut. It's Lords, it's an Ashes Test match, it's Saturday, which is the most prestigious day of that fixture. It's the middle session, everybody's watching. It's the passage of play, how desperately England needed to remove Smith then and there to have any opportunity of getting themselves a first innings lead. It all combined to be the most pulsating sort of 30 or 40 minutes of cricket that I could just about ever recall watching in the flesh, and to sort of see a version of it again this afternoon when Archer bowled before tea, and mentioned before Khawaja and Warner, but Labuschagne to have the presence of mind to get through that, also getting whacked on the head. If not for that grill, he would have had a broken jaw like Jeff Lawson back in 1988-89. Make no mistake, that ball would have broken his jaw to smithereens. But yet to recover from that, to be beaten outside the off stump repeatedly, but to just maintain that calm disposition to play straight to Archer, to come back after tea and get him out of the attack, albeit briefly, he's the reason why Australia leave here 1-0 up instead of 1-1 to Leeds, because if Archer gets Labuschagne and gets on a roll before tea with so many overs available to them in that extended final session, there's every chance that Australia lose this test, and that would have been quite the turn-up considering the way they played on day one.
Collo, we could talk about this match for about 16 hours. and obviously we can't. But just with Archer now, does it completely change the test series? And are Australia as a collective, are they rattled by what they've seen? Because they've known him. He's played in the Big Bash. But I kind of feel that I'm not sure they thought he could do what he did.
Yeah, Whitey, this was different gravy. Yes, we've seen him in the Big Bash. Yes, we've seen him in the World Cup. But as I kept banging away before this match, he's better with the red ball. He's better when he can build up pressure. He's so consistent. The amount of movement he generates in red ball Duke's conditions, if you like, means that he was always going to be more of a handful in a test match than he has been in white ball cricket. When there is a degree of everyone swinging, from the get-go in T20 cricket, and rightly so, it's a different form of the game. But having your technique and defence tested the way that Archer was able to do consistently from the first evening where he bowled, when he was sending them down at Warner and Bancroft, all the way until the very end today when Travis Head was doing his best to stay out there and not get himself nicked off. It was just a compelling spectacle to watch. The fact that the bulk of it happened in excess of 90 miles an hour just adds to the theatre. Look, the way that he conducted himself throughout the week as a professional cricketer, I mean, it would have been hard after what happened with Smith and Labuschagne. We see with fast bowlers sometimes they can lose their bundle after an episode like that, but he stuck to the task as well. He's just such a, I mean, it's hard to sort of put into words just how compelling a player he is. I mean, I saw some of the disparaging remarks towards him on social media from people who hadn't seen the episode and were up in the middle of the night and might have caught a couple of unfortunate screenshots, but that's not what happened either. I mean, the way that was presented by some clickbait merchants was, well, precisely that, wasn't it? It was an exercise in trying to hoard a bunch of likes and faves and so forth. It wasn't a reflection of what actually happened, and that's a regrettable piece of subtext from the match. But hopefully, after today, people can focus on what was happening between Archer and Smith, and then subsequently between Archer and Khawaja and Warner and Labuschagne, and we can appreciate and respect the fact that, yes, it was high-octane cricket. Yes, there was a degree of danger associated as well, but it was absolutely compelling. And I'm sure as cricket people, we can respect what we've seen over the last couple of days.
Hey, Colo, so what is what will be an argument next week or a discussion is the Australian quicks and who's that third quick and who misses out? Patterson, assuming, comes in?
Yeah. I would assume so on the basis that Hazelwood had two stress fractures in the last 15 months, so I don't think they'll fancy playing him in back-to-back test matches. I might be wrong, but I would have thought the smart money is to be conservative with Hazelwood, knowing they've got Manchester and the Oval to come after that. Whether they'll play a 34-year-old in Peter Siddle in back-to-back test matches is something that I would doubt, even though he did bowl particularly nicely when there were wickets to be taken through the course of this test match. I can see a scenario where Michael Nisa gets an opportunity to make his debut. Nisa has been by far the most threatening bowler in the nets. I mean, you can only take so much from watching net practice, but he's the guy that gets Stephen Smith jumping around and talking to himself and asking him questions about, oh, how did I miss that? How did I not play that correctly? That seems to be Nisa. So it's a bit of a like for like. I can easily see a world where he's the man to replace Peter Siddle, and then they've got, you know, they're spoiled for choice really, aren't they? Whether it's James Pattinson or Mitchell Starc coming in for Josh Hazlewood. On the other hand, they might play all the quicks. We know that Headingley, since cricketers have been keeping their data since 2005, he's been on average the quickest pitch in the world. And by contrast, this pitch at Lord's was the second slowest since that data's been kept, according to what cricketers said. So you're going from Archer bowling at 96 miles an hour on a quite slow pitch to one of the quicker surfaces in the world. That'll be brilliant. But also the response from Australia, as you say, Brendan, will be really interesting as well to see what combination they go with. Will they try and fight fire with fire, or will they go with their plan A, which was to bowl as tight as possible and work so well for them at Birmingham? And indeed, worked well for them today as well until Ben Stokes got on a roll and took a calculated risk, which came off in that middle session today when he plundered, I think it was 65 runs in 55 balls.
Has the psychology of the series changed, do you think?
Absolutely. I mean, what Jofra Archer's been able to do in the space of a spell yesterday and then a couple of spells this afternoon is just lay a marker that they have the ability to take 20 Australian wickets. And look, before this, we know that James Anderson is one of the most skilled Ashes bowlers we've seen, but within out of the 11, they did look a fraction fragile. And if Archer didn't live up to expectations or if injury got the better of him, that's a lot of pressure on the shoulders of the veteran, Stuart Broad, and Chris Wokes is probably on the next line of the expertise and experience in that England lineup. So the fact that Archer is legitimately the attack leader already, make no mistake, he was the guy who Joe Root was throwing the ball to at every available opportunity. So being able to throw someone in like that on debut at age 23 to carry the attack the way that he did and still have that auxiliary of Broad and Wokes in the short term, and Jimmy Anderson will probably be back for Manchester, it just gives them that confidence they can take 20 wickets. And then the fact that Jack Leach is also now kind of in the series, 3 wickets this evening. He didn't bowl the house down, but he did bowl very nicely and got the ball turning square, which for a finger spin is all so important that they can prove that they can turn the ball so batsmen don't take them on routinely. So, look, they've got a lot of work to do with their batting, which is still, I mean, notwithstanding the fact that Stokes batted so nicely today, they had a bit of support there from Johnny Bairstow, but they've got plenty of work to do with the bat, and Australia will expose that. But I think this is a contest now which we can see being a real corker, whereas maybe 4 or 5 days ago we were a little bit worried that this might be heading down a familiar path as one of those home 5-0s of a couple of Ashes cycles.
Yeah, I've got a feeling there might be a fair bit left in this series, which is good for Test cricket, Colo. We can't believe you're not on a train, but we appreciate your time.
an absolute pleasure. A lot of fun.
Nice work. Adam Collins, the host of the Final Word podcast, All Ashes Long on RSN 927 with Jeff Lemon. Does a great job.
Make no mistake, the weather saved Australia.
Yes.
Steve Smith saved Australia in the first test.
Yes.
This series is well and truly alive.
Saved the first in the first innings as well, didn't he?
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not just the first test, the first innings.
Absolutely.
Game on.